You see, Foo Fighters did another show the other night in the Valley at a pizza place. Did you see that? They did like a full-on concert at this tiny little pizza place. It's just
they love that, and they show up unannounced too. They just all of a sudden
they put out a word on Twitter like a couple of hours before with just an address, and then people showed up, and sure enough, there they were doing just a full concert. Just amazing. God, those guys are the best. Hey, welcome into the Kevin and Bean Show. Dr. Drew versus Miley Cyrus. What's that new feud all about? We'll talk to the good doctor himself in just a few minutes. First, though, as we wind down to the remaining few shows of the Kevin and Bean program for 2013, we're starting to look back on some of our favorite things of the year. We're putting together top 10 lists. I think yesterday we did the top 10 Omar song intros for us, the little jingles that he does for our bits. We have the top 10 internet roundup videos tomorrow, by the way, on the show. Top 10 moments with.
Hey, great.
That's going to be a lot of fun. Will Kevin once again be the champ? You have to tune in tomorrow and find out. Right now, though, you guys ready for the top 10 Kevin and Bean sound bites of the year?
Woohoo! Yay!
It worked.
These are the little drops, we call them, little sound bites that we play, little pieces of tape that have become very popular, things that we use a lot on the show. We're counting down the new ones that we played a lot in 2013 and what they mean. Number 10 is one of our own, and I especially like this clip. It comes from our own beautiful Lisa May. I especially like this clip because you can tune into almost every Kevin and Bean show for the whole year, and at some point, Lisa will say these words out loud.
I'm bored! I'm bored! I'm bored!
That is number 10 of our sound bites for 2013.
She does sit there and just look at us all glassy-eyed every once in a while, and we know we've lost her.
Number 9 is, every couple of years, we pull out the tape of longtime radio legend Casey Kasem doing that dedication to Snuggles the dog, and he just throws an enormous tantrum. He's so upset with what he's being asked to do on his American Top 40 show that at one point he begs to talk to his producer. Here's the clip we put it. Number 9.
He's down on the phone.
Because now every time something goes wrong on our show, we don't even know Don, but we start to think, hey, is Don on the phone? We got to get him on the phone.
We did question, however, why Don would just be on the phone during his recording session.
Because he never asked them to call Don.
Right.
He just wanted to know if somehow Don was already available to him. Number 8 is a lady that we had a lot of fun with two different times in 2013. She got on our radar. She's the British DJ working for the station where she showed up drunk, tried to do her air shift. She got fired back in March. She was recently rehired, did another drunk air shift, and got fired again. And here's a little bit of what Paula White sounds like at number 8.
It's a P-A-R-T-Y because I said so.
And kind of related to that, the American version of Paula White shows up at number 7 at our best sound bites of the year.
That must have been a moment of party.
I mean, come on.
Now, Pete, if you're going to give the intro, you need the reverb, so give me a heads up on that.
Is moment of party, by the way, is that where the party bus comedy started with you, is after the moment of party, do you think?
I
think those are separate things.
No, because the party bus actually came from a party bus incident in Vegas.
Yes.
Okay.
And I saw the party bus incident last night at the Troub, and they were very good.
Number 6 on our list this year is another guy that we fell very much in love with. He is a rapper who lives in Detroit, and I can't imagine Ralph doing the celebrity birthdays on his Showbiz Beat without GMC Faux Show.
Birthday. It's my candle blowing birthday.
Yourself a favor, go to GMC Faux Show's YouTube channel and just while the day away. It's crazy how many great videos he has.
He tweeted that we were the best show.
We are the best. We're the best. All right, get your reverb up for me here. We're counting down the We're counting down the top 10 Kevin and Bean sound bites of the year. And we're up to number 5. I don't know how it happened that Thomas Dolby was in concert in 2013 and decided to have a special guest star join him on stage for his big hit, She Blinded Me with Science. But astronaut Buzz Aldrin came out, and we get this moment at number 5.
She blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Oh.
No one has ever been worse at delivering one line.
And later we said, silence! Right, that's exactly. Not even science. What are you doing?
Number four, our friends over at the Today Show had a very revealing interview with Al Roker, the weatherman, who Kevin has some sort of cartoon hate for some reason. He seems like a very nice man to me. But Al was telling a story about how he was on a tour of the White House or over at the White House on some sort of journalistic business one day, and he had a little bit of an incident that involved him having an accident and having to go into the White House restroom and throwing away his underwear. Here's how Al described it at number four.
You pooped in your pants.
I pooped my pants.
TMI right there.
Yeah.
Is that an image that, why would you ever admit that on television?
I don't know.
Ever. Because isn't it the first thing you think of when you see Al Roker on TV
yes.
now?
Yeah,
how can you not?
But I have to be honest, if that happened to me in the White House, I would tell the story as well.
Really?
I mean, you sort of you owe it to people.
Because you're in the
right, you're in the White House and that happened? That is not your story to hold on to.
Good point.
Number three, I'm happy to say Kevin makes a return appearance in the top 10 Kevin Bean soundbites of the year. Look, Kevin is famous for not knowing who any celebrities are, not knowing anybody's name. He mangles all of them. But this one at number three, I think was especially spectacular when he was talking about the teen mom, Farrah Abraham.
Farrah Abramson?
I mean, we got a lot of mileage out of Farrah Abramson, didn't we, throughout the year?
Oh, good time.
All right, getting close to the top. How about number two? Our friends who do the voiceover work over there at The Honest Trailer, they're the ones who make the movie trailers that are so hilarious. They can make the best movie in the world sound terrible the way they describe it. Well, they're fans of ours and we're fans of theirs, and they went into a studio and recorded a bunch of stuff for us, and nothing has given me more pleasure than The Honest Trailer voice guy saying these words at number two.
Fire beer mug.
Right?
The best voice ever.
Any thoughts on number one, you guys?
So it had to originate in 2013.
This is a drop from this year. Huh. It's not only my favorite, it's probably the one that we've played the most, our most popular soundbite of 2013.
Number one!
Wheel in the sky keeps on turning.
Yes! Ladies and gentlemen, that's great, right. Rob Delaney at number one. And there you go. Give me the big echo one more time. These have been the top 10 Kevin and Bean soundbites of the year. We will talk about the future of late night television on the networks with our friend Michael Schneider from TV Guide coming up in about a half an hour from right now on the Kevin and Bean Show. In about 5 minutes or so, we'll tell you how you can join us tomorrow night at Kevin and Bean's April Foolishness. First, though, what about bacon condoms, you guys?
Bacon condoms.
They're
a thing.
Is that what the world has been waiting for, is bacon condoms? Those are things that exist. Those are two things that in a million years most people would never put together in one product. But most people aren't Justin Esch, who joins us on the Kevin and Bean Show right now from J&D Foods from Seattle, Washington. Hi, Justin. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
It's our pleasure. I know that you've had lots of bacon products throughout the years, and you have been a master at getting people to talk about your company for free. So congratulations. It worked, first of all. And second of all, you must just sit around all day long thinking, what else can we put bacon in by the time you get down to condoms, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a huge function of just what I do all day long, is just innovate products and think about stupid, silly, funny things. I mean, imagine just working with your best friend and going to work every day, spending an hour being like, what's the most ridiculous thing we can do today?
How long ago did you come up with the bacon coffins?
The coffin we launched last year. And the coffin we actually came up with 2 years ago. It actually came up right after we did the bacon sex lube. And
the bacon sex lube.
Yeah, bacon lube. That
okay.
was the hit.
Bacon lube. All right. Good.
It was actually 3 years ago. We did bacon baby formula as a joke. It wasn't a real product. And we figured we'd covered life, we'd covered sex, so we might as well cover death. And we had they came up with the tagline first, which was, you know, for people who love bacon to death. And
Did you move any of those?
Yeah, we did. We originally made like 10 of them. There's one more left. It's sitting in my office behind my desk on this pedestal. So if anyone wants to, at first it was just super creepy. It's like you're at work and there's just a coffin, like a full size casket behind you.
But it looks like bacon.
Yeah, it's just ominously weird, and it freaked everybody out that came to my office. Now I really kind of like it. I've taken naps in it.
Now, the question that I have about some of your products, and we're going to get to the condoms here in a minute, Justin, like Bacon Sex Lube is a perfect example of something that to me sounds like a novelty gift that you'd buy for somebody to give it at a bachelor party or whatever, but it's not something that would ever be used. It's just a gag gift. Is that what you're finding, or are there people who don't mind the scent of bacon in their lovemaking?
You know, I think there are some people that actually do use it in a practical, real, sexual sense, and I think that those people are ridiculously terrifying. I don't want to hang out with them. I don't know.
You'll sell them the product, but you don't want to know them.
Oh, America. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a capitalist. But no, our business is not coffins and sex lube and condoms. That's fun, and that's an extension of who Dave and I are as people. I mean, I'm 34 years old. I like to get weird. I like to have fun, and I love money.
Right.
But, you know, the business itself is selling, you know, mayonnaise, microwave popcorn, croutons, seasonings, you know, these core consumer products to the biggest retailers in the world. I mean, our largest clients are, you know, Ralph's in L.A., Walmart, Safeway,
wow.
Target.
Legit,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and that's where we make our money.
And it all started with Bacon Salt, which some people thought was a joke when it began, but that turned out to be enormously popular, right?
Yeah, it's been huge. It's been really cool. We started the company in 2007 out of Dave's garage, and Bacon Salt was the first product we made. I mean, and now you know, Denny's puts it on their tables as a seasoning option.
That's crazy.
So it's been really cool.
Tell people how you got started in the business with the money.
Oh, well, we really funded the business was Dave's kid hit him in the face with a baseball. And we submitted the video, or his wife did, to America's Funniest Home Videos, and he actually won $5,000. And so we just stole the money straight from his kid and parlayed it into bacon-flavored interest.
And that's how the business got started.
That's amazing.
Winning on America's Funniest Home Videos.
America is a great country. Now, did you have a Shark Tank moment? You know that TV show on Friday nights, that Shark Tank show where people come in, inventors come in, and they pitch their ideas. Is that what you had to do? Did you have to go to somebody to make Bacon Salt, or did you and Dave work on it in a lab in the garage and create it yourself?
A bit of both. We got pressured hard to be on Shark Tank twice.
Oh, really?
The first two seasons, yeah, absolutely declined. And the way that it went down was, you know, I came up with the concept. I told Dave about it. He's like, let's do this. We're both working in the technology industry. I was like 26. And he just said, yeah, I'll help you do this on the nights and weekends. It'll be like a funny project. I was going to use it for a grad school application to Stanford.
Right.
And they were like, we move along. My buddy from college, it turned out, his dad was the CEO of this huge dry goods, like development and manufacturing company based out of Idaho. I had no idea. And so I told him I was working on this thing. He's like, oh, call my dad. He knows some people. Call this guy up. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's stupid, but I'll help you out. And he led me in the right direction. It was like this great resource to get us out, get us going. And that was like the initial, how do we start a food company conversation.
I like that he helped you, but also let you know that it was stupid.
Yeah,
that's a nice touch.
Sure.
All right. This is the voice of Justin Escher on the Kevin and Bean Show. Again, he is with J&D Foods in Seattle, and we're talking about, among other things, the new product that caught our attention, which is Bacon Condom. Now, just like we talked about with the lube, is the Bacon Condom something anyone would ever use in sex?
Have you seriously never dreamed of making your meat look like meat?
I'm going to go with no.
Lisa, it would be a deal breaker for you, Lisa,
well,
I assume.
Here's the problem. Like, bacon is the food that men love.
Yeah, that's true.
So you need to give me a cake condom.
Oh, there you go.
Do you have cake condoms?
Yeah,
write that down.
Well, cupcakes?
We'll make a red bottom shoe condom, too.
Yeah, maybe frosting is the way to go for the ladies. That's an exit. Maybe the bacon condom is going to be huge for you in the gay market, but maybe for the heterosexual sex, you got to get something going with frosting.
I'm happy you're the first one to bring that up, because I have learned over time that the vast majority of the usage of the sex products that we have created does play in the gay market space. We get a lot of interest from those publications and stuff. And, you know, hey, man, everybody's money spends the same, so I'm all
absolutely
about it.
Of course.
And we know it's done well. It's a cool concept. I think people just think it's fun and funny. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation here in Seattle, they announced a contest a few weeks ago that's $100,000.
Oh, right, for a better condom.
The better condom, right. Yeah. So I just hit him up. I just went straight at Melinda and Bill on Twitter. You know, like where do I pick up my $100,000 check? Bacon condoms, the future, win America. Let's do this.
How'd that work out for you?
They haven't gotten back to me yet, but you know, maybe today is the day.
I'm sure.
I hope as we say goodbye, Justin, I hope that somewhere on the United States flag one day it says bacon condom, win America. Let's do this. I think you've just created a new slogan for this country. All right. Bacondom.com or baconsalt.com or just do a Google search for any of these things and you'll come up with J&D Food headquarters. Justin Esch has been our guest. Fascinating story. It sounds like you're having a great time and making a living too. And that's all you can ask for in this crazy world. Thanks for coming on, man. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
USA! USA! What a great country, huh?
Absolutely.
All right. It's time for April Foolishness. How You Like Me Now tickets. The show's tomorrow, so this is going to be your last chance to get those tickets right up front. And we are going to play a game that you need to participate in. So give us a call at 1-800-520-1067. Anything else you need to know?
I think that's it. I think just be prepared to try to win the tickets. They're VIP tickets, which means you get the parking, you get the T-shirt, you get the party with Kevin and Bean, and you can call right now. We'll take your calls next right after this on the Kevin and Bean Show on Camera.
Let's talk about people who protest. This dude is awesome. Now, Bean, I just tweeted out.
I'm not going to look at
listen
it.
Listen to me.
I don't want to know about
listen
it.
Listen to me.
La, 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 la.
I just tweeted out a Huffington Post report where they blurred it.
Oh, okay.
So they show the guy, and they show that he's in Red Square, but they blur what actually happened. And this guy's a performance artist, in quotes. And listen to what he did. And there are pictures out there if you want to see it. And I've seen the picture, and I'm telling you right now, you will never unsee that picture. On your deathbed, you'll think, wow, that guy really did that. Here's a report.
This is Pyotr Pavlensky, a Russian artist.
Pyotr Pavlensky.
And as a metaphor for the apathy, political indifference, and fatalism of contemporary Russian society.
So that's what he's protesting. Just the fatalism and the indifference of Russian society. I mean, okay. It's sort of a vague.
It is.
It's not actionable.
Right. There's nothing you can actually do to solve the problem.
Yeah.
So the guy goes out and sits down naked in Red Square and takes a hammer and a nail.
Stop.
And hammers the nail right through his, not testicles, but his sack. And the nail goes in. Back out and into the cement that he's sitting on.
Yeah.
It's not pleasant as far as protests go.
He nailed his ball sack to the cobblestones of Red Square.
How funny is to hear her say that? He nailed his ball sack.
YouTube won't actually let us show you the real footage, so we bring you our own reenactment of this ballsy event. Footage indicates the nail entered a safe distance from his huevos. Amazingly, there was no blood.
Yeah, that's true. There was no blood, and that's odd. Because you would think a nail going in and a nail coming out.
Right.
I don't know, maybe a little blood.
It is just a sack.
Yeah, it's just skin. Just skin on either side.
I guess so, but it's a pretty big nail, by the way. This is not like a tiny little nail, like a finishing nail. This is like a giant, hold the frame together nail.
God.
But how... This is what I always think about the monks that you used to see that used to set themselves on fire. How does that convince people to do what it is? That just says you're crazy. That's all that says is you're insane and I shouldn't listen to whatever it is you're trying to get me to do because you're the kind of person who would nail his testicles to the ground.
Right. Look, I've always said the same thing, which is you're really only hurting yourself.
Right.
For real.
Like if I walk by and I see you, I'm not going to go, you know what? I'm a little apathetic about government. In a country where I have no say in the government.
Right.
It's just not going to happen. I'm going to go, that dude crazy. And that goes for people who go on hunger strikes as well. I always think, well, there's people that don't have food. Maybe this will help. Doesn't hurt me. You can not eat as long as you want. By the way, this is not the first protest that this guy has ever done.
Then a police officer came and covered him up. Pavlensky is no stranger to pain or public displays of self-mutilation. In July of last year, he sewed up his lips to protest the arrest of members of the feminist punk rock group Pussy Riot.
He sewed his lips.
Oh, he sounds worse to me.
Nope. First of all, nothing is worse than the ball sack, but he sewed his lips together.
At least then I knew what he was protesting and what he wanted.
Right. And
he
thank
certainly
God,
called attention to it,
and
I guess.
Thank God Pussy Riot got right out of jail. Oh, wait.
Shouldn't this guy just get himself a Twitter account or some other way to express himself? Just hurts
then
a little less.
Then in May, he wrapped himself up in a barbed wire cocoon in front of the Legislative Assembly of St. Petersburg.
What's really happening here is he is the worst trying to commit suicide guy ever.
Yes, I think you're right.
Barbed wire cocoon. That's not cool.
Hey, they're playing night number two.
They are. That's true.
Comedian Adam Ray joins us in about 50 minutes or so here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Mike Ness from Social Distortion in the 9 o'clock hour. And by the way, Lisa, looking ahead toward tomorrow morning's all-new Kevin and Bean Show.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, the return of comedian Michael McDonald. He'll be in studio with us tomorrow. And we're also going to talk to a guy who's behind the documentary about the maybe perhaps the first ever punk rock band. What am I hearing?
What's going on?
Go ahead. Fine. I'll wait.
Oh, Roland, come on. We got something else. We're doing something else here.
Yeah, you're right. You're doing something else. You're gonna do the right thing and help me make some changes in this world.
All right. Hold on one second there, Roland. Listen, one of the first punk rock bands in America, and they happen to be all African American. A band called Death is the name of the movie. We'll tell you about a group you never heard about, but were incredibly influential. That's tomorrow, right here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Roland, why are you always butting into the broadcast? What's going on?
Because from time to time, I need to use your flimsy little morning radio show to get the word out about what's important.
I feel like we've been covering everything that you could possibly be interested in. It seems like thanks to your friend Ralph Garman, all we ever talk about is goddamn Superman and Iron Man on this show.
Well, how about the important things like Star Trek?
What's going on with Star Trek? Yeah. That movie's been out like a month.
You just died.
I just blasted you with my phaser for being stupid.
What are we supposed to be saying about Star Trek today? The movie's out.
What's happening in Sacramento?
What's happening in Sacramento?
See, this is why you need me, because you don't know what's happening in the world. Important
Tell me.
Changes are happening.
All
Did
right.
you hear what happened yesterday?
No.
What?
In Sacramento, they have taken two streets, and they have renamed them Klingon Court and Romulan Court. Now you can live at the corner of Romulan and Klingon.
That's a terrible idea. That's a terrible idea. Why would anyone want to live on...
And if by terrible you mean the world's greatest idea, then yes, you're right.
It just seems like it's like having a dumb name. You have to constantly explain to people, I know it sounds like a joke, but I really do live on Klingon Court. Nobody wants that.
Everyone wants it, and that's why we need to start making changes here in Los Angeles so that we don't get left behind by freaking Sacramento.
Isn't it enough that there's a TV show and now a bunch of movies about Star Trek? Why does everything in the world have to be Star Trek-centric?
Because everything Star Trek is better than everything else. That's why.
I wish you would go into outer space, Roland.
Oh, zing! I don't know if I can deal with that sort of razor-sharp wit, but I'll try to continue.
Why don't you lower your head?
I wish you would go into the bottom of the ocean and stay there instead.
All right, so Sacramento unfortunately has a Klingon court and a Romulan court, and I understand that they are an intersection. They do
yes.
they do come together at some point.
You can let what? The corner of Klingon and Romulan.
What do you want us to do about it in Southern California?
We need to start changing popular Southern California names to Star Trek theme names. It's
like
obvious.
What? Like what?
The 2 freeway.
The Glendale freeway?
The Glendale freeway, known as CA2, needs to be changed.
To
what?
Star Trek 2. The Wrath of Khan!
That's just dumb.
Turn it to Khan, the Conway.
So Lisa would be doing traffic, and she would say, things are really slow on the Wrath of Khan this morning.
Things are really backed up on Khan. Khan's really backed up.
I don't think we need that,
Roland. Overturned pickup on Khan.
I think the 2 is fine.
Is that why you're driving, and you're stuck in traffic? Go, Khan!
Well, that is kind of tempting.
Yeah, well, it'd be great. Or... how about Martin Luther Kirk Boulevard?
Okay, again, that doesn't make any sense because it's named after an actual real person who existed in the world, not
yes.
made-up fantasy.
Or a person who's going to exist in the world, like James Tiberius Kirk, who will be born.
I think Martin Luther King probably deserves his own street at this point, Roland.
What did he do compared to what Kirk did?
Well, we don't have time right now.
Kirk
right.
saved the world and the universe several times. Martin Luther King, to the best of my knowledge, just had a dream.
He
I have
never
a dream every night. What if I don't get a streak?
All right. We're going to pass on that one. Do you have anything else?
Spakpulvita.
Okay, now I'm in.
Come
on.
The corner of Ventura and Spakpulvita. I'll be waiting for you. There's a hospital there. I won't take you there, but I'll be there. Ask Harmon, he knows.
I have to be honest, as much as I hate everything about this, Spakpulvita is pretty righteous.
Spakpulvita!
Speaking of Kate Upton, though, she has got a lot going on because, well, she has so much time in her day because she's not spending any of it talking to Kevin and Bean, so she can do a lot of other cool things. She's in a new movie, just been announced. She's been in a couple of movies before. I think she was in that Tower Heist movie. She's been in a couple of other films. But she's in a new movie where it sounds like she's playing a pretty significant role. It's going to be starring that guy from Game of Thrones, Nicolaj Coster-Waldau. You know, one of those big hunky stars from Game of Thrones?
Mm-hmm.
He plays a man who is married to actress Leslie Mann, who you know from all the Judd Apatow movies. Judd's wife, in fact. So he's married to her, okay? He's cheating on her with Cameron Diaz.
Okay.
Kate Upton is his other mistress.
Wow.
Okay, so he's got a wife, he's got a mistress, Kate Upton is his second mistress, and none of them know about each other.
Okay, good.
And that's what got me to thinking.
Where does it all go south?
Because it does.
It does. It goes south because the affairs are discovered, and the wife and the two mistresses get together to come up with revenge on the husband.
Oh, that poor bastard.
Yeah, that's no bueno. But here's the question that this caused in my mind, and I'd love to hear from the Kevin and Bean listeners who have experienced this at 1-800-520-1067. How can you date anyone for any length of time that is married and you not know it? Doesn't it seem like there would be
a lot of clues?
A million clues.
Let's go back to your house. Go to yours. No.
What are you doing for Christmas? Nothing. seems like there would be an awful lot. I mean, it seems like that's something that I don't know how you could pull that off for more than a couple of weeks. If the relationship was anything other than just banging, it seems like there would have to be some sort of interaction outside of the bedroom where it would become evident that you couldn't call this guy at home, or what's with the ring, or what's with the kids, or whatever. It seems like something would happen that would tip you off. Like, how long could you hide your wife, Kevin?
I can't imagine very long. We're not talking about distance, though. That's the only thing that would make it a little easier, is if they were in another state or something.
Oh, you got a long distance.
You got a relationship where you travel and you only see her when you're in Cincinnati or something
like
that. Yeah, you could probably pull that off.
Let's say same, because I do. let's say you're in the same city.
Right.
How can you hide that?
I can't imagine.
Because, Lisa, I mean, you've got antenna, and they would certainly go up after a very short amount of time if something didn't add up, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, for one thing, if you start sleeping together, you're probably going to spend a night together.
Right. Mm-hmm.
How does he do that?
Right.
And you would definitely want to go to his house at some point.
Right, but he would say, no.
Right. And
what are you doing for Valentine's Day? Nothing. Well, we should spend it together. Can't.
Talk before you go to sleep. That kind of thing. That's what couples do, right?
Sure.
I can't imagine.
I can't imagine it either.
Maybe a couple of weeks, a month at most.
That's what I'm thinking, too. But, I mean, I have heard stories. I mean, who was that famous journalist, that CBS journalist? Was it Charles Kuralt, Lisa, the one who died?
Families.
Yeah, a whole other family.
Families. Now, to Kevin's point, the family was in Montana, and he lived with his wife in New York, I think. But she didn't find – she'd been married to him for decades and found out after he was dead that he had another relationship that had lasted almost as long with a completely different woman with completely different kids in a completely different state and had no idea. But at least he had a job where he traveled. So it's a little bit understandable.
I wonder if this is one of those deals where you just want to believe that person. You love him or whatever.
Yeah. And you just can't believe that someone would lie to you like that.
Right. But he's a guy.
So, of course he does.
let's take one call before the break, and then we want to hear from you. What were your experiences of dating someone who turned out to be married? You didn't know it. 1-800-520-1067. That's our toll-free number here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Afton is going to get us started here on line two. Afton, welcome to the show, my dear. How are you?
I'm good. Just hanging out at PCC.
All right. Oh, cool. All right. Fantastic. So you heard the plot of this Kate Upton movie. It sounds like it's plausible compared to what you've lived through, right?
It could be.
How long did you date this guy?
a year and a half.
And he was married the whole time, and you never knew it.
And living with his wife.
For 5 years, actually.
He was married for 5 years.
I was only with him for a year and a half. I was 17. I had no clue.
Okay, so what about all the tip-offs, all the clues? I mean, did you ever go to his house?
No, he never invited me over. I mean, I was 17, so really he just picked me up. We'd go out, he'd spend money on me, and then I was like, okay, I'm happy. I really don't care if I go to your house or not.
Okay, I get that for a couple of dates, but once it gets to be a year, don't you go away together? Don't things happen where it kind of takes him out of his real life?
Yeah, and that's why he got caught. It was because finally she was like, what's going on? He's never home. He's not at work. And that's not. And then she walked up on us when we were eating lunch. And I was like, who's that? And he's like, oh, crap, it's my wife.
Oh,
that's
man.
The best. After a year and a half, though, I mean, you have to look at yourself and go, did I miss some obvious clues here?
I knew. I was like, I'm so retarded. I'm so
retarded. And he said, here's some more money. Don't worry about it.
So did you break up with him?
Later. Huh?
Did you break up with him?
Oh, yeah, right away. She asked me to come to the divorce court, actually, and testify. And I was like, no, I'm not even here. I'm 17. I'm going home.
Oh.
I'm never going to see money anymore. I was really just using
Wait, so you dated him for a year and a half, and you were 17 when it ended?
No, I was 18 and a half when
okay.
it ended.
All right.
Yeah, I'm much more comfortable with this story with you being 18. That's all. All right, so, but you, were you in love with him?
No, it wasn't anything. I mean, I have really bad post-traumatic stress disorder, so I use guys kind of. I've only been with three guys. He was mm-hmm. the first one that I've ever been with, so I used him really bad. And
does he have a wife? I don't know, but he buys me shoes.
But all right, a year and a half, though, that's exactly the kind of story we were looking for. Thank you, Afton. We appreciate the call, okay?
All right, thank you.
All right, bye now.
Boy, she sounds like trouble, doesn't she?
Yeah.
1-800-520-1067. You were dating for a long time and then found out he or she was married. We want to hear your story when we return on the Kevin and Bean Show. Talking about you're dating somebody and then after a lengthy relationship, find out that the other person is married. I can't imagine that happens, but look, Kevin, every single phone line
yep.
is on hold.
Yep,
it's apparently it not only happens, it happens a lot. Abby is on line two. Let's find out what her situation was. Hi, Abby. Thanks for calling the Kevin and Bean Show and holding on. How are you today?
Hi, I'm great. Good morning, everyone.
How long did you date this dude?
I actually dated this guy for 2 years.
And was he married the entire time?
Oh, yes, definitely. I was 18 at the time, so mm-hmm. I didn't really know any better.
Right.
But, yeah, and I actually had a child with this guy.
What? So yes. was you're blowing my mind here. So when you were having a baby, I would imagine that's when you expect the father to be around a lot. But he also had a wife at home that he had to make up excuses every time he left the house, right?
Right. Well, his excuse was that he lived with his mother and his mother was very private and she was very sick and, you know, very diabetic. And so
wow. He was playing you hard with his mom.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. And so, you know, I had the baby and his thing was like, okay, we're going to move in together. We'll buy a house. So when we went to fill out the paperwork, you know, for like a credit run and everything, that's where I got his social security number and did a background check on him. Not only did I find out he was married and had a family, but that he had actually 9 children.
Oh, my God. You're kidding me.
Oh, you were dumb.
So what happened? Did you end it?
Oh, definitely. And I actually printed the report with the kids' names on it. And I said, okay, this is it. We're over. I want nothing to do with you.
Not even child support?
Not even child support, nothing.
Wow. Wow, what a story. So you got your eyes open now. You want to go to a man's apartment or home on his first date now, right? Just to make sure there's no wife around. Yeah.
You give me a name and I do a background check, not even the first date.
All right, Abby's scaring me now.
No, I don't Thank blame you
very
her after
much.
That.
No, I don't either. After that, unbelievable. Thank you very much for the call.
9 kids.
That's
no wonder
crazy.
You wanted to get out of the house.
All right, let's talk to Daniel. Let's get it from the gentleman's perspective. He's on line 5 here on the Kevin and Bean Show. So, Daniel, you were dating a woman and found out she was married, right?
Yes.
How long?
We were dating for about a year and a half, 2 years, and she got married 6 months into our relationship and kept dating me.
What?
So while she was dating you, she got engaged and got married.
Yes.
And how did you not see any of the signs?
She lived in Garden Grove. I live in somewhere. I live north of there.
Right.
So.
But not in another state.
Right. No, how about when she went away on her honeymoon? what were you thinking? Where was she that you thought?
She said family vacation.
Well, she was telling the truth.
That's true.
Yeah. It is a family vacation.
You never went to her house.
She lived with her parents at the time. And when she said she moved out with some friends.
Did you?
And she invited me over whenever he was at work.
Oh.
And there were pictures? Or what?
There were no pictures.
She's good.
I found out she was married when she asked for the TV remote. We were sitting on the bed. So I reached over, grabbed the TV remote. When I pulled it off, I knocked a little box that was sitting on the
nightstand. Yes.
And the rings fell out.
Her wedding ring and his ring?
Yeah,
that's his whole TV remote story is a cover up for how much he was snooping in that house, by the way. But, yeah. So you did find out, and did you break up with her after you found out she was married?
Yes, I did.
Okay. All right, man. Thanks for the call. Appreciate
ballsy
that.
To bring him home.
Let's talk to Tony. This might be even better.
I think so. Tony, welcome to the Kevin Bean Show. Thanks for calling. How long were you guys dating?
You know, that's not really important.
How long were you dating?
Let's not focus on the negative.
But how long were you dating?
12 years.
12 years. And how much of that 12 years was your girlfriend married to another man?
Let me count. One, seven.
7 years?
Dude, what happened?
How old were you when you broke up?
We're still together.
Yes!
And is she still married?
She's divorced, right?
Is she still married?
She is.
What's going on, Tony? What's the story, dude?
Women are crafty, bro. Women are crafty.
Men are dumb.
Yeah, men are dumb. All right, so how were you dating her for so long and not knowing she was married?
You know, you kind of know. I mean, in the bottom, you kind of know.
Oh, so you kind of didn't care.
He kind of doesn't care now.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
How did you find out she was married for 7 years while you were dating her?
Social media, and then I was like Googling, and then all of a sudden I see a picture, and I'm like, hey, wait a minute.
You saw a picture with her and her husband?
Yeah, and then she kind of confronted her. She kind of came clean and said, hey, look, 7 years ago, remember that one time I went on a family vacation? Well, it was a honeymoon.
Oh, my God. Right. And you were like, that's all good. Let's keep seeing each other.
But why does she marry somebody if she wants to be with you? I don't get it.
It's family. It's a very family. Like her family loves this kid, and family loves this guy, and
family wouldn't approve of you, would they, Tony?
No, they wouldn't.
Are you waiting for her to leave him?
Yeah, she's supposed to be getting a divorce the next couple of months. So.
Tony.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah.
Tony.
Absolutely. Any minute now. Are you kidding? She can't wait to get a divorce. That's all she dreams about is how she can leave this man
Come
12
on,
years.
Tony. She's been with him for 7 years. Married.
I'm an optimist. What can I say?
Oh, Tony.
There are other words than that I would use.
Dumb. Thank you for the call. We appreciate you listening. I hope most of our listeners are smarter, though. I haven't heard anything about this guy. I haven't seen one second of this show, but I've had it up to here with this Urban Tarzan, Kevin.
It's really magic.
I'm declaring a fatwa on Urban Tarzan. First of all,
magic.
This douchebag is named John Brennan, who legally changed his name to Urban Tarzan, one word. Not first name Urban, last name Tarzan. One word, Urban Tarzan is his name. Second of all, he's got a show where he goes around with, I don't know, with monkeys, with guns and horses at nightclubs. I don't even know what the hell is going on with this show, but it is a new program that is on the Spike Channel Tuesday nights at 10:30. Do you have an understanding of what's happening in this program, Kevin?
I think that he is like a wild animal wrangler, and he goes around to people who have loose animals and tries to, like, get them under control and stuff, but I think it's all fake. It's just stupid. Like, in this clip we're about to hear, Urban Tarzan takes on a monkey, and they have a trank gun. Let's hear the clip.
He's got a gun. He's got a gun. He's got a gun. Is that gun loaded?
I don't know.
Come on.
Listen, we got to distract him. We got to get him to drop that gun.
What about food? Does he have a favorite food?
He loves cheese puffs.
Well, who doesn't? See him?
Yeah, he's still got the gun. He's still got the gun, but he's aiming the gun right at us. Wait a minute. Put the gun down. Put the gun down. He's coming for the cheesy puff.
Is he?
Yep.
I don't blame him.
See? Now,
That's good acting right there.
Now, that's a scene where the monkey has the gun, and then later,
right.
And then later in the scene, he's drinking cough syrup. So I don't think – I can't imagine this is real.
Well, we wanted to find out more about this, so we asked producer Dave, get us the goddamn Urban Tarzan. And here he is on the phone on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hi, Urban Tarzan, one word, all capitals. How are you?
Good morning. I'm Urban Tarzan. How you doing?
We're good. Well, we're fine, but we're having some trouble wrapping our head around the show. Why don't you explain it to us, sir?
Well, I'm Urban Tarzan.
Right.
And I go into the jungle, but not the jungle you ordinarily think of with Tarzan.
Right.
I am in the urban jungle, perhaps the most deadly jungle of all.
Okay. Wow. And it's a real show. You just happen to take cameras in when you try to, you know, catch some of these animals, like a pig that's running through a frat house in one of your upcoming episodes?
That's right. Everything is real. Everything is as it actually happened. You are watching it. The home viewer yourself, you too, are on the adventure with me. I'm Urban Tarzan.
Right, but in that clip, you sounded like the worst possible actors reading the worst possible dialogue, that thing we just heard with the monkey and the gun.
No, that is all real. That monkey actually had a gun, and I had to say, whoa, hold on, monkey. I'm Urban Tarzan. Put down that gun and stop drinking the scissor.
Urban Tarzan, seriously,
yes,
though.
Yes, I'm Urban Tarzan.
What are the chances that you go to a house where a monkey, A, has a gun, and B, is drinking scissorp?
That is how the urban jungle is sometimes. It
no,
is a
it's
very
never,
dangerous place.
It's never like that.
No, it's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
Wow, that's an excellent question, Urban Tarzan. What other adventures are we going to see on your Spike TV show Tuesday nights?
Well, we have had many adventures because I am Urban Tarzan.
Right.
Sometimes we go to a store and they have an ostrich running around loose. That ostrich could kill you, my friend, and that's why I'm Urban Tarzan, because you call me in and then I would take care of that ostrich problem for you. Have a lion walking around your neighborhood? Call Urban Tarzan. I come and I make sure that that lion is taken care of in a humane way, and I make sure that no one gets hurt. I'm Urban Tarzan.
Urban okay, Tarzan, I can't help but notice that it sounds like you're reading everything.
No, everything happens as you, the home viewer, watch it. You are also along with that adventure with me. I'm Urban Tarzan. And keep in mind, all these things are real. They are not in any way done for your entertainment or television. It is all real adventures of me. I'm Urban Tarzan.
Urban Tarzan, right. Now, let me take you back to the lion story for a minute, because this is, I guess, where I first heard about your program, is there were those who suggested that you literally took a lion down to the L.A. River and then released it just so you could capture it on tape like 2 minutes later.
Ooh, that kind of talk makes me so angry.
You don't sound angry. You sound like you just read that.
I'm so angry. I'm Urban Tarzan. No, all these adventures are for real, and you, the home viewer, get to come along in my adventures because I am Urban Tarzan.
Yes.
But what happens, sometimes it is like a jungle, but it's in the city. It's
right.
An urban jungle.
Right.
Yeah, we understand. We got you. Okay.
And sometimes it's very difficult to capture some of these wild animals. Please, do not forget, they are wild animals. They
right.
are
wild
not
animals.
For your, you should never make a wild animal a pet. That's a word for me. I'm Urban Tarzan.
Urban Tarzan. Okay.
Can we just...
Right.
Sometimes it takes me two or three attempts to actually get an animal into a cage.
You said takes.
No.
Right there.
You said two or three takes. Sometimes it takes two or three attempts. That's what I meant to say, because I am Urban Tarzan. I am not familiar with your language coming from the jungle.
Can we just stipulate... You grew up in Brooklyn, by the way.
Can we just stipulate that you are Urban Tarzan?
First of all, it's important to remember that I am Urban Tarzan.
Right, we got
right.
that. Oh, what's the problem? What's
Uh-oh.
Happening?
Uh-oh, we sure have a monkey loose here.
What? How did it just now get loose?
Hold on, monkey. Stay calm. Stay calm, monkey. No, put down that moonshine still you've been working on.
What?
That is flammable. You stop, monkey. Get in that cage.
What city are you in?
Mission accomplished. I am Urban Tarzan.
How is mission accomplished? You didn't do anything. You just said get in the cage.
Now what's happening?
Oh, that's... Crazy pig has stolen my Pictionary set. Hey, come here, you crazy pig. You will not bother these nice people in this neighborhood any longer. Get in that pig cage that I brought along. I am Urban Tarzan.
Wow, he's good. He's really effective. Uh-oh.
That's some kind of bird.
You can't identify it?
Hey, dangerous bird in the urban jungle. you will not bother these people anymore because they have called me. I am Urban Tarzan, and I will humanely put you back in the cage.
This is you brought a lot of cages with you.
Yeah.
That sounded like a rifle shot. What was that?
No, I am Urban Tarzan. I use my skills as a jungle.
That was a rifle.
Yeah, sometimes I got to shoot him.
Tell you what's madness is whatever you're doing right now, instead of being in line for the first screening of Anchorman 2 at whatever theater is near you. The movie's out, people. What are you doing not going to see it, right?
That's right.
How about Steve Carell back on the Kevin Amin Show? Hi, Steve.
Hi.
It's finally here.
Don't be idiots. Go see the movie.
Right, exactly. Like we haven't given you enough heads up that this movie is coming out today, Wednesday, December 18th. There's no excuse for one human in America to not be aware of that fact at this point, right?
Yeah, the only way the promotion's going to stop is if you go see it.
Right.
Oh, okay. That's a good way to see it.
So, how you been, Mr. Carell? Welcome back. Holidays, sir.
Happy holidays to you, too. We're
just talking about you a few minutes ago. That list came out of the highest grossing actors, according to Forbes, of 2013. And you came in at number 3 of the highest grossing actors in the world.
So suck on that.
that's got to be a lot of fun.
Boy, that thing. I mean, who would have thought that this little movie, you know, it wasn't like a big, big thing, the first one. Mm-hmm. Would turn into what it did, and then the second one. So, yeah.
And aren't they making a Minions? They're making a Minions spinoff or something, too, right?
They're making a Minions spinoff with Sandra Bullock and John Hamm, and that's coming out next year, I think, yeah.
Sweet. And, of course, you had The Way, Way Back, which we loved. We talked to you right when that came out. That was one of my favorite movies of the year, Steve. You were so great in that.
Oh, thanks.
So great in that.
Yeah, that turned out pretty well.
Let's talk about the Anchorman. Are you the hero of meteorologists all over America? Can you not go into any American city without having a weatherman come up and want to shake your hand?
I think I am the bane and the hero to meteorologists. I think they both deplore and they revile me and yet hold me up. So I don't know.
What was your mind space for Brick when you went back to make Anchorman 2? Now you've moved from the 70s into the 80s, but I suspect that a few years on Brick Tamlin does not equal maturity.
No, there's not much human development with Brick over the years. And Brick, in fact, doesn't really know where he's been in the intervening years between movies. Although, in this movie, he's a little bit more emotional than he was in the first one.
Well, he's in love,
there's
right?
A little bit, there's more on his plate. Yeah, he gets struck by lightning. Maybe literally, but he actually falls in love. And it's a big... He loves more than Lamp in this movie.
you must have known... I imagine you knew and have worked with Kristen Wiig before, right? Who plays your girlfriend in the film.
Well, she played my love interest in Despicable Me, and I did some scenes with her when I hosted Saturday Night Live. So
that's what I thought.
I've worked with her a little bit over the years. She's great. She's
amazing.
Man, she is amazing. She's never not funny. She's always good.
We had Mr. Koechner on with us yesterday, and we were talking about, you know, all the crazy cameos, many of which we wouldn't spoil on the radio, but just, you know, it's not easy to walk into a group like you and Will Ferrell and Paul Rudd and Christine and all these people who kind of have that improv background and have already made the movie before. And I was asking what it's like for a Greg Kinnear or a Megan Good. And he said, look, everybody was fine, but Kristen Wiig, man, we're racing to keep up with her. She's so quick.
Yeah, she's pretty spectacular, you know, and she's completely fearless. She will try anything, and she will look as dumb as she wants to look and have no problem with it. She's very, very special.
Did you always want to make another Anchorman movie after the first one? Because I know it took years and years and years to finally convince Hollywood the public demanded this, but what were you thinking personally? Were you hoping it would always happen?
Well, I was always game for it, and I think we all were. There was never a question in our minds. If Will and Adam felt like they had a viable sequel, that we'd all jump in. So, yeah, we actually all signed up having not read anything. There's no script in place when we all signed on to do it. We actually shot the first trailer for the movie with no script written, and that's the amount of confidence that we had in these guys to write something good.
Well, I mean, how could you not with the track record? I mean, you know well, you're one of the writers on the film, too. I mean, you included. You guys know you get in a room, you make funny. You just know that.
Well, Will and Adam are pretty brilliant. And it's, I think, tonally, it took a while for people to figure out the first movie. It was, a moderate success at first. But I think over the years, people acquired a taste for it and started to understand the tone and kind of the absurdity to it. And over time it grew. Those guys are so funny and so good that, yeah, we had complete faith that they come up with something great.
It's so interesting. You know, we talk to so many actors on this show, Steve, and of course you have these conversations in real life with your friends, that you just don't know when you're filming something how it's going to go over. You can think it's great. It could be a disaster. You could think it's just so-so, and it just might strike a nerve and live forever. I mean, Anchorman is a perfect example. Office Space is another example of a moderate success that now is just a classic, just a beloved movie, and there's no explaining how something like that happens.
There really isn't. It's not like you say a line and expect it to wind up on a T-shirt or a coffee mug. It just happens, if it's going to happen, and people take to it organically, I guess. So, yeah, I totally agree.
You have a lot of those kinds of lines from all those years in The Office that I'm sure people love to quote with you when they run Indy on the street. Is I Love Lamp, is that the big one from the first Anchorman that people say about Brick?
Oh, definitely. As a matter of fact, a couple of years ago, I heard that during Wimbledon, there was sort of a lull in the play, and someone in the crowd yelled, "Loud noises." Which I thought was pretty cool.
That's an awesome tribute to you, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought so. That's the way I took it. That was great.
I know we're in our final minute here, but I have to ask about one more thing. Koechner told us yesterday that Adam McKay doesn't yell action and doesn't yell cut. You just film until you drop dead? How does that work, Steve?
You just kind of go until you can go no more. And he rigged up a way of feeding us lines, too. He had a microphone at the monitor and a speaker on set. So as he'd watch the monitor, if he had any ideas, he'd just throw them out. And, more often than not, they were really, really funny things. So they create this environment where you can just kind of try anything. And if it's terrible, it just doesn't go into the movie. But
I'm not going to be friends with anyone if they can't prove to me they've gone and paid to see Anchorman 2 over the holiday season. That's it. You are out of my Rolodex in 2014 if you don't see this movie over the holidays. It is available in theaters all over the world today. Please go see it. Our friend Steve Carell is in it, and I know he's going to be great. Steve, we love having you on the Kevin Bean Show. You're so generous with your time. We really appreciate it. Happy holidays to you.
Thanks. You too.
By the way, is there a category in the Guinness Book of World Records for the professional drummer that has played with the most different bands? Because I think Dave Grohl is going for it.
I saw
a promo last night on ABC. I was watching Scandal, and they were promoting the Country Music Awards that are happening next Wednesday. Dave Grohl is drumming for the Zac Brown Band.
What?
On that show.
He has to own that record by a lot, right?
I mean,
he's played with everybody.
He's the best.
He is.
What the hell is he doing playing with the Zac Brown Band?
He just loves being a rock star more than anyone. And it's cool to see that rather than like some rock stars are like, oh, this life sucks. This is depressing.
But you know what?
He owns it.
The other thing about him is that he doesn't consider himself like a rock star. He just loves what he does. Yeah.
He just loves music.
You talk to him, he's so down to earth. It's crazy.
That's the voice of our friend Brad Williams, by the way, who's filling in for Ralph on the Showbiz Beat today. And Brad, I'm glad you're here because I'm debuting a new feature here. We haven't tried this one before, but I can't explain why. I am fascinated with when you type onto your search engine on your computer. You can use Google or Safari or Yahoo, whatever you use. You know how you start to type something in and then the computer gives you options to autocomplete it based on what the most popular searches are for that topic?
Sure.
For instance, if you type in how many gallons, it will autocomplete underneath, and you'll see that the most common things that people type in are how many gallons in a keg or in a liter or in a pool or in a bathtub. And it's a shortcut to give you a chance to get to the page that you're looking for.
Sure. This is Jim Jefferies played a great prank on comedian Eddie Ifty.
He gave Eddie AIDS, right?
Yeah, he had all his fans. Jim told all his fans to type into Google, Eddie Ift has AIDS.
Yep.
So whenever my buddy Eddie Ift types in his own name to Google, it auto-completes it, has AIDS.
Yep. I'm so happy you remember that. I had forgotten about that. That's an awesome story. So I thought it might be fun for me to give you the start of what you type into your search engine. And for you guys, we'll go around the room. We'll have Kevin, you'll play. All Brad, right. You'll play. Lisa,
all
you'll play.
All right.
And we'll just go around just in a real fast circle, and everybody can take a stab, and you get a point if you get one that's on the list.
Okay. Now, wait a minute. On the list or first?
Just on the list. Anyone that comes up on the list. And usually I think, you know, seven or eight or something like that, 10 come up. All right. So this is our new game that we call the autocomplete game.
Ow! How about some heavy metal? Autocomplete game. Hey! Autocomplete game. Hey! Autocomplete game. What does Google think you're trying to search? Autocomplete game. Hey! Autocomplete game. Hey! Autocomplete game. I only search for naked grandmas. Ow!
Yeah.
All right. Omar has gone bye-bye.
This game sponsored by Satan.
All right. First up on the autocomplete game, Miley Cyrus is. Miley Cyrus is. Kevin, you want to take a stab at it first?
Miley Cyrus is.
A whore.
Darn it, you took mine.
I am sorry that whore does not appear.
How did it not appear?
An excellent guess. Brad, you're up next.
Miley Cyrus is. I'm going to go. Is twerking.
Good. Yes, point for Brad.
Oh!
Lisa May.
I was going to do twerking.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Now it's easy to say.
It's easy to pick the ones that have already been named.
Licking.
I'm sorry. No licking. No, we had ugly was number one, by the way. Followed by gross. Followed by disgusting. Followed by not hot. Then crazy. Then twerking. Then a hoe. Very close, Kevin.
Oh,
very close. Then pregnant. Then an idiot. Those were what we got for Miley Cyrus.
Oh, my God.
I think we should give me credit for hoe.
I kind of do,
Doesn't
too.
Hoe mean whore?
Yes.
That's like, you got to speak street, Kevin.
Right. Look, if you guys want to give Kevin the point, I'm fine to give Kevin the point.
All right, Kevin, you got the point.
All right.
He's charity.
All right. Next one. How not to. Now, just imagine.
Most people.
Yeah, boys and girls, men and women around the world, mostly in English, I guess, sitting down. Mm-hmm. And what would they be Googling how not to?
How not to.
Who wants to go first?
I'll take it.
Okay.
Be a douchebag.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it should be.
Good guess, though.
Should be something everyone's typing in.
How not to
die. Kevin. Die. How not to, well.
Kill yourself. Whatever.
Die. I'm sorry, no.
Injure.
I'm sorry, no.
Come on.
I was going to say get AIDS.
All great guesses, you guys. Beer Mug, do you want to come in? Beer Mug, do you want to jump in as a dark horse and see if you can get us a point for not even playing?
How not to ask somebody out.
How not to ask somebody out.
Many people want to know
you
that.
Guys.
Okay.
You were skirting it. How not to get shot is number one.
What? Oh.
Then how not to be seen, how not to worry, how not to be lazy, how not to be nervous. Here's the one I can't believe nobody got that I would have thought was number one. How not to get pregnant.
Oh.
But we know the answer.
I would have never thought people were still searching that.
How not to get old. How not to be jealous. How not to cry. How not to fall in love. How not to live your life. Those are all the how not.
All right. So zeros across the board for us.
All right.
Woo, all right.
We're killing it.
Playing the autocomplete game here on the Kevin DeBede Show. Sorry. I thought I might have an Omar stab.
I don't know.
All right. Here's a good one. Is it normal if I?
Is it normal?
Lisa, why don't you go first this time?
Is it normal if I can't stop eating?
I'm
looking at mugs.
No. Brad?
No.
I'll jump in.
Hold on.
Put your phone down. I would say masturbate too much.
Great guess, too, but not on the list. Not on the list.
Is it?
I'm sure that's in Kevin's browser. I guarantee that.
Is it normal to itch?
No, I'm sorry. Again, you're gonna not be surprised by some of them. Number one is it normal if I, Lisa, miss my period?
It's all about pregnant.
Yeah.
Think about what a girl would be Googling, right?
Right.
After that, is it normal if I don't poop every day? Is it normal if I want to eat people? Is my favorite, by the way. which
was very
is third.
Close. I think yeah. you should give that
What'd
to me.
What'd you say?
Can't stop eating.
Well, is it normal if I hump my pillow as fourth, talk to myself as fifth, then never had a boyfriend and never had a girlfriend?
Aww.
All right. Close game here. What's the score, Lisa?
Well, one and zero.
Brad and I have one.
Yeah.
Okay. We're tied because of your charity.
Yeah.
We just have time for one more then. And this one I think Brad's got the advantage on.
Ooh.
Why do midgets? Why do midgets?
Oh my God.
Who wants to take this one?
Wow. I feel like I should go first.
I'll go first.
You'll go first?
Consider themselves people. No, I'm sorry, Kevin. An excellent guess, though. I've often wondered the same thing.
It's only like 0.5, really.
Have giant heads.
Yes, number one. Have giant heads.
On the board, Lisa May.
You can still get a point as well.
I can still,
Brad,
get a point.
If you can nail one, then you win the game, right?
We're all tied at one right now.
Okay.
Before this.
Why do midgets?
Now, Brad, again, what an advantage he has because he's been asked all of the midget questions in his life.
He must have asked them as well.
Well, if I'm going with the question that I get most often,
okay,
I have to be... Why do midgets, and can I phrase this appropriately for the radio?
Yeah.
Is it about your crotch, isn't it?
Yeah! Why do midgets have big junks?
Okay.
You know what he's saying?
No.
Yes, I do, but I'm sorry. That's okay.
Not it. Why do midgets have big heads is number one. Brad,
darn
I'm sorry
it.
To say, why do midgets die early is number two.
What?
Wow, that's wrong.
We die
early?
That's a downer.
What? Why do midgets look the same is the next. Huh. Why do midgets, and please explain this one to me, laugh when they run?
Oh, that's an old joke.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah, it's no like a one-liner joke. It's why do midgets laugh when they run? And the answer is because the grass tickles their junk.
And the last two, we'll end on a bittersweet note. Why do midgets smell like cabbage is next? And then finally, why do midgets exist? So there you go.
Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, who's our winner?
It's a tie.
It's a tie.
We all win.
We all win.
Everybody gets a trophy.
Thanks for playing
Autocomplete Game.
Autocomplete Game. I only search for naked grandmas.
We've been hearing about it for a long time. It is finally here, the documentary from Dave Grohl called Sound City. You can see it on the 31st. What is that, like
Thursday?
Yeah. Maybe Thursday night at the Cinerama Dome. And then you get a pair of passes to see the Sound City Players, which is Dave Grohl and the rest of Foo Fighters, along with Brad Wilk from Rage and Stevie Nicks and Rick Springfield and John Fogerty. And so much more. Got passes for both. You can win them. Excuse me, right after the top of the hour coming up here on the Kevin Bean Show. Ralph, why are you so excited?
Because this is all I care about. It's the only reason I came in this morning. I was going to call in sick and just sleep in. But then I remembered we were doing this segment, and I said, oh, I have to get up. I have to get up and get to work.
There was a red carpet world premiere of Hansel and Gretel last week, and our man Beer Mug attended with a microphone. Now, this time we did videotape it. You can see it at krock.com or kevinandbean.com. This is the extended version. We only show you play you the highlights on the radio. But
guys, they're really getting good.
I thought so. He does feel like he's really turning into a good interviewer.
Yeah, I know he does.
No, comparing him to my past interviews, I think I am getting better.
Really?
Yeah, I really do.
Okay, all right.
Here's his introduction to the piece.
Hello, Beer Mug here at the red carpet premiere of Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters, starring Jeremy Renner and Gemma Arterton. Let's see what stars I could talk to. Let me see which celebrities I could talk to today. Let's see which celebrities are going to want to talk to me today. So let's see what celebrities I could talk to with this awesome thing.
Yes!
With this awesome thing.
What is this awesome thing?
Referring to a microphone?
The microphone, yeah.
Why would you refer to that as an awesome thing?
Well, it is brand new technology, Kevin.
Yeah.
The fact that you can hold a stick that records audio now is the talk of the town.
Wasn't the first of those the best? I mean, he went back and did it over and over and over again.
Fine.
I like to give the camera guy a couple cuts to work with.
Sure. Yeah.
So Beer Mug interviews the fight coordinator about the movie Hansel and Gretel.
What can we expect in terms of fighting style? Are there any kind of specific, like, martial arts, or is it just straight out brawling, you know, fight?
Yes.
You're getting better.
That was a Kevin.
You are getting better.
That might have been not
straight out brawling
straight
fight.
Up
that might not have been the sharpest of questions.
How many times, by the way, have we heard Beer Mug start a quiz with what should we expect?
Yep.
What can we expect in terms of fighting style? Are there any kind of specific, like...
Now, I know where you're going with this. It makes sense. Taekwondo or jiu-jitsu.
What
or,
styles of fighting did you incorporate right. into the stunts?
That's yeah. what he's going
Man,
for.
I wish I could say it like that. Yeah.
You started okay, but then this
What do we expect with fight?
Martial arts, or is it just straight out brawling, you know... Fight.
Fight.
Straight out brawling fight.
Oh, man. That's the style we use. We use the straight up brawling fight.
Yeah.
What if Beer Mug were to interview the music composer? What would you guys be afraid
no
of?
No good would come from it.
Well, what do you think right would happen if you had to guess what happened?
I play music.
One of the things, yes. The other thing that he likes to do is to bring in other composers.
Yeah. Sure.
When I think sure. of composers, I think of everybody
Hans
but you.
Zimmer, John Williams, and your name is, sir?
Listen to this and how quickly it's encapsulated.
Do you sit down and listen to a lot of John Williams?
No.
Wow.
Why is it you feel the need to compare every soundtrack composer to somebody who's vastly more acclaimed and famous than they are?
Well, look, I mean, everybody has, you know, is inspired by somebody.
Right.
Ask that question.
Okay.
Yes. Who's inspired okay. your work? It's a different question than, do you sit down and listen to a lot of John Williams?
Okay. So, okay.
It's basically asking, do you steal John Williams stuff for your movies?
Since you're not as good?
Do you sit down and listen to a lot of John Williams?
No.
Do you wish? Angry.
I want to hug that guy right now, whoever he is.
Do you think the director would have rather gotten John Williams for the movie? Because I would.
Because he's
do you,
better.
Do you watch a lot of Steven Spielberg movies and then copy them to your own films, Mr. Director?
Now, I don't know why, but Beer Mug is obsessed with asking people to sum things up in 10 words or less.
I don't know. Like, yeah,
I don't understand.
Great point, Kevin.
Ask a question in 10 words
well,
or less.
True.
What is the rush
What's the
that you
rush?
Have to get these people off the red carpet where you have to limit their word count, Muggs?
I don't know.
I mean, what could you explain in 10 words or less?
Look, Beer Mug's backed up. A lot of stars are just waiting to talk to Beer Mug, so he's got to burn through them, you know?
Tell me just in a brief synopsis, maybe like 10 words or less, what the fans that are anticipating this movie can see.
Well done.
What?
Well done.
You can't even ask a question in 10 words or less. But the fans that are anticipating the movie will see.
I feel bad for Jeremy Renner because he got caught with Muggs.
Oh, no.
And again, you can see these videos at krock.com or kevinandbean.com.
Jeremy. What's up, man?
What's up?
Johnny from K-Rock.
What are you doing?
Pleasure to meet you. Big fan. First off, I want to say you're very good at your craft work.
He's in craft work?
There was an awful lot of wasted time with small talk with you saying hello to Jeremy Renner 8 different ways.
I'm Johnny, big fan. Yeah.
By the way, your Beer Mug, first of all.
Right.
We know your name is Johnny, but Beer Mug.
Okay.
On the red carpet.
Okay, all right, done.
Yeah. Here we go.
I don't know how you do it. Acting is not an easy profession, but you pull it off in every role you play. So I just want to say congratulations in the work you do.
Oh, well, thanks, man. I feel blessed to do what I get to do for a living.
All right, so now he's being nice.
Moving on.
Yeah.
But what was the point? What was the point of that?
He's
that
good
whole
at everything,
though.
Acting is difficult.
How about some information for us, the listener?
Why?
Good question.
But I think what Ralph's point is that we all know that Jeremy Renner is a good actor. You're wasting everyone's time by telling him that he's a good actor.
And I'm sure Jeremy Renner's on the red carpet saying, I hope a guy from radio congratulates me on my work. Then I'll finally feel accepted in the industry if some guy from radio says I'm good.
But at least Muggs had the wherewithal to not mic Jeremy Renner during that exchange, so we couldn't really hear what he was saying.
Tell me a little bit about Hansel, your character, when you got called to audition, or how did you get involved with this role?
Ralph's about to spit out his coffee.
I'd like to point out that Muggs is getting better.
Or so he says.
Ralph, don't spit. Don't spit. You should know better than to drink good news.
Tell me something about your character, Hansel, when you got the call to audition. Well, I guess it was just a character in a script at that point. I guess it was just words on a page when I was called to audition. That's all about my character at that stage.
What if the poor director had to do an interview with Muggs? Then what?
Then he would kill himself afterwards.
When it comes to actually shooting the piece, how many cameras do you have going at one time on one scene? Like, with so much, is there a lot of quick cuts?
Oh, man.
You got to narrow down your question, man. I mean, you start with how many cameras, and then you end up with an editing question. It has nothing to do with how many cameras.
Very ADD, I know.
Muggs, you know you don't have to ask all your questions at once, right?
Okay. Well, I feel, you know what, though? I do feel.
He does feel like
it's genuine. The questions, by the way, would be, how many cameras do you use when you shoot a scene?
But if you're going to ask it, at least leave it at that.
Just
let him answer.
And let him go.
Oh, this is good. All right, director, how about 10 words or less?
One last question, Tommy. Without giving the twist away, what can fans expect? And just give it to me in 10 words or less.
Of course. I just think they can expect a fun ride because we mix genres in a fun ride, I think. We mix action, horror, and comedy with extreme gore as well.
All right, now Muggs busts him on the 10 words or less. Because this guy's not playing by Muggs' rules.
And hopefully it's a fun combination.
That was more than 10 words, but I love it.
If you translate it to Norwegian, it's 10.
Okay. That's pretty funny. That's not bad.
We should have that Norwegian director do all our red carpet interviews.
What about Famke Jensen?
Oh, yeah.
No.
What about Beer Muggs working himself right into the Uncle Creepy role that Bean usually plays? You ready?
No. Famke Jensen, ladies and gentlemen, you look absolutely ravishing. I could eat you up.
Well, don't.
God damn.
I could eat you up.
Jesus. Well, don't. Real quick, what will fans take away from this, do you think?
What will take fans take away from this movie?
Yeah.
What does that even mean?
What does that mean?
Well, they'll see a film.
What
does that mean? What do you expect them to take away from it?
Yeah.
What are they going to take away from the movie?
Yeah, well, I don't know. The story of Hansel and Gretel?
What would your guess be?
That witches suck? I don't know. She could have given me something.
That witches suck.
That's what you were mining for. That's the nugget you were digging for in this interview.
I honestly feel... I feel rushed on the red carpet a little bit. I think.
Wait a minute. I thought you were stepping up your game and you're way better than you've ever been before.
Okay, but listening back to these, maybe not so much. But you guys should have heard my Last Stand interviews with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I'll bet those were good before you erased them.
Yeah, they were good.
And then he wraps things up.
So that's a wrap on the red carpet premiere of Hansel.
Take two.
So that's a wrap on the red carpet premiere of Hansel and Gretel. I think I got some celebrity interviews and I think they were mediocre. You be the judge. I'm out. So that's a wrap on the red carpet world premiere of Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters.
All right, wait a minute. Are you out or are you not out?
I got a lot of the stars in the movie. The only one that I didn't get to talk to was Gemma Arterton. But I think Kevin and Bean put the gag order on that for no-go, so it wouldn't work. So, oh well.
Try it again.
Better luck next time.
Try it again, Muggs.
Well, that's a wrap. There you have it. The world... that's a wrap. There you have it. The world carp.
Wait, you're done or you're not done?
He's out. But then he's back in.
Trying to help out the camera guy.
All right. Moving.
As long as even one of the Ramones is still alive, we're going to continue to play that song. Classic on the K-Rock Kevin and Bean Show here for a Wednesday. Congratulations to Susanna Wukobo from Pico Rivera. She won tickets to go see Nine Inch Nails at Staples Center. That show doesn't happen until November the 8th, but tickets are going on sale this Friday at 10 a.m. Plus, she is also qualified to win the private helicopter ride to the show, a suite at the JW Marriott, and the best seats in the house. Nine Inch Nails tickets all this week on the Kevin and Bean Show and throughout the day at K-Rock. Lisa, you ever look at those Forbes lists that they come out with of the wealthiest people in the world?
Yes, and I wonder, how did they get all that money?
I think it's so fascinating. And the one thing I'll say about Forbes is my understanding is that they do everything they can to make those lists as accurate as possible. I mean, they are a business publication and they dig as deep as they can. Now, there are some people who manage to, you know, shelter some of that wealth or are not very forthcoming. They don't agree to have their, you know, have their bank accounts made public. But Forbes does the best job they can at estimating if they don't know exactly. And that's why I was really surprised to see this story. There's a prince in Saudi Arabia whose name is Awalid bin Tal. Bin Talal. He's one of the wealthiest people in the world. In fact, even Forbes says that he is the 26th wealthiest person in the world. They estimated his fortune at over $20 billion. What do you think his reaction was to that? Hey, thanks for the pub, Forbes? No. He is suing them because he says, hey, I'm actually worth closer to $30 billion. You underestimated my fortune. Now I look like a pauper.
What? Are you kidding?
He thinks they have ruined his reputation because they estimated he was worth $20 billion. He says they were off by $9.6 billion. He's actually worth $30 billion.
Oh, my God. What an ego.
What's up with that? We wanted to find out more about the story, so we asked producer Dave, could he please line us up, the Saudi Arabian prince, and I believe we have Mr. Bin Talal on the phone with us right now. Hello, sir.
Hello, my babies. How are you doing, my babies, my pretty, pretty babies?
Well, I'm doing fine, but I'm a little bit confused by this story. Why are you suing Forbes?
Well, it's obvious why I'm suing them, isn't it? I mean, come on, they said I was worth $20 billion. But, of course, I'm worth much more than that, $30 billion, at least $30 billion. So they made me look like one of those hobos who just had $20 billion.
I don't know. It seems to me like $20 billion is a lot of money. I mean, I don't think anybody's worried about you. I think you can print food on the table for the family, right?
It's libel, my babies. It's libel to say that I only have $20 billion. I spit on $20 billion. I am $30 billion. Listen, babies, this is how I roll. I have a plane, okay? I have a 747. It's my own private plane, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. It's beautiful. It's called the Flying Palace, okay, babies? You know what I sit in on that plane? Do you think I sit in a seat? Like you paupers who have not $30 billion?
Well, what else would you sit in on an airplane?
A gold throne, babies! Babies, it's made of gold!
You have a gold throne on your private 747.
That is right, my beaches.
Okay, we understand that you're rich, but what does it...
I don't think you understand how rich I am. $30 billion. You haven't had much how $30 billion is?
It's a lot of money.
It's more than a lot of money, babies. It means that I poop gold now.
You actually poop it.
Yes. There you go. There's a little gold brick for you right now.
He wasn't kidding about that. But look, how does it really damage your reputation? Once you're talking about this kind of money, it doesn't really matter how much you have.
It absolutely matters. It matters more now than ever, my babies. You must understand, I am going up against all those low-life, white trash billionaires who have $20 billion, and I cannot be put in that class. I am in a class of my own. $30 billion is what makes me Alawid Ben Talal, baby!
Right. So,
there we go. There's another little gold brick for you. How do you like that?
So, Prince, what are you spending all this money on besides, you know, the jet?
I'm spending on everything. Everything you want. I can have women. I can have drugs. I can have politicians in my pocket. I can do anything I want with my money. It makes me indestructible, my babies. Except when a magazine says I have $20 billion. That makes me furious.
Yes, I understand. All right, so you're suing them. You're basically accusing Forbes magazine of libel, saying that they've ruined your good name. How do you think that case is going to go?
I can't wait. I'm suing them for $30 billion. That way I'll be having $60 billion when it's all over, babies. And then there we go.
What?
I don't feel so good.
Oh, Prince, no. You sound fine. You're not. You were fine. There's no indication of this. Who could have seen this coming?
Well, us.
Hey, look, it's platinum. I throw a platinum.
Here's a great idea. What about all the people all over the country who think, I want to go out to Hollywood and make it in show business, but I don't know anyone out there and I don't have the first idea of what it takes to make it in show business? Why not write a book for them? How's that sound?
My advice is stay where you are.
Yes, don't do it. Don't come out here. It's hell.
If that's you, then have we got the book for you, 103 Ways to Get into TV by 102 Who Did, plus me. Jim McCarron is the author, and he joins us in studio right now here on the Kevin Beach Show. Hi, Jim. Welcome, my friend. How are you?
Thank you so much. Doing well. Thank you.
Now, in the interest of full disclosure, because you look exactly like Ralph Garman, did you guys come from the same street in Philadelphia at the same time? What happened?
No, Jim and I knew each other back in Philly. Not on the same street, but we grew up roughly in the same neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim and I have been pals since we were teens.
You guys were bullies, weren't you?
We were not bullies.
I think you guys are bullies.
We were drunkards. We were wiseacres.
In Philadelphia, aren't drunkards bullies?
No, because okay, everybody's drunk. Yes.
Now, Ralph, we have heard your story on the Kevin DeBeat Show about how you wanted to be an actor, like so many young men, and that's why you moved out to Hollywood and making a go of it. How about you, Jim? What was your story?
Well, I was in publishing. I had a degree in journalism from Temple University back in Philly, and I was in publishing for most of the 80s. And then life changed at the end of the decade, and I said, you know, what's the world going to be about? What do I want to do? And so at 29, I packed up and sold my house and moved out here with nothing.
Wow. Without a job.
Without a job.
Okay. Now, you kind of had one tiny little in. You had one person that you knew in all of Hollywood, right?
Not really. I knew one person who had come out to USC to get a degree in screenwriting, and I knew Ralph, of course, who had arrived about 2.5 years before I did.
Right. You weren't counting on the Ralph connection, though, were you?
Well, there was no connection there. I was bartending at the time, I couldn't help Jim.
Perhaps being a private eye of some kind.
Yeah, that's right.
So you lived through it and actually ended up making a career. And tell folks some of the jobs that you ended up doing in Hollywood.
I will point out, though, that my first day here was August 20th, 1989, which is famous for what?
August 20th, 1989. Should we know that?
We should. It's the day that Lyle and Eric Menendez killed their parents.
All right.
Wow. All right.
Jim, for full disclosure again, Jim is one of these guys who knows a ton of dates. And
that's what I do.
Has a sort of photographic memory when it comes to dates and occasions.
So sort of like worthless, but a lot of information.
Tons of worthless information.
Okay. I mean, he can recite for you the given TV schedule of any given day of the week and any given year. He can give you pretty much the entire TV guide rundown of what was
now,
on that
which
night.
Made me a freak until I realized it was job security.
That's
okay,
right.
Now
yeah.
Tell us about the job where you used that, being asked you what you've done in town.
It took us several years to get to the position, but I started at CBS in 1993 on April 12th.
See what I mean?
5:37 p.m.
Steel Magnolias was the CBS Sunday movie the night before.
I'm not kidding. This is
real.
What's
happening? That's true?
That's true.
All right. So then?
And I was in time between that and program planning, which is sort of tapping into the database in my head. And that was 93, and for the first 2 years, I split departments. And then when Leslie Moonves came in 1995 and started to clean house, he said, no splitting of departments, and you're, you know, more valuable in program planning and scheduling. So I ended up leaving in 2006 as vice president of scheduling for CBS.
Wow. That's an actual real-life Hollywood job. I mean, you were
a real job,
a bigwig.
And we thank Norman Lear for it. He's the one who set it up. Not set it up. He set the wheels in motion. So
name five Norman Lear shows. Go.
Well, All in the Family, Good Times, Sanford and Son, Hot L Baltimore, Mary Hartman.
There's your man. There he is. There's Jim.
It's ridiculous. Right. Don't ever play Trivial Pursuit with this guy.
So you.
A.K.A. Pablo.
All right. We're moving on.
The powers that be.
All right. Take it easy.
You have
I'm sorry.
Done...
I got a little lightheaded there for a minute.
You have done exactly what the people who buy your book want to do, which is come out to Hollywood and make a career in entertainment. And you took what you've learned, and you've also taken the lessons from, as you mentioned, 100 other people, how they made it in Hollywood, and you kind of compiled them all together. It was kind of a primer for people, like where to start if you don't know anybody or have never been to Los Angeles before. It's a great idea, Jim.
Thank you. I mean, the roots were in the fact that I was teaching in Chicago, and the students I had heard enough about follow your heart and trust your instincts and stuff that is kind and sincere but gets them nowhere.
Right, sure.
And you know, look to L.A. either as an unknown entity. So literally, what do I do when I get there?
Right.
Don't tell me to believe in myself. Where do I go, north or south, when I land at the airport? Mm-hmm. And I'm not kidding. Those were some of the questions.
So did you come out here to be in front of the camera, behind the camera, or did you not care?
I came out here to be behind the camera. I guess for about 10 minutes, I convinced myself I was going to be a TV writer.
Okay.
A sitcom writer. And I did with this person who was a friend of mine who was learning at USC, I did write a script for the old Newhart show, the one set in Vermont.
Okay.
And we didn't know that it was interesting. We didn't know that you couldn't do this at the time, and we just did it, and we got an agent to read it, and it made its way to the showrunner, which...
No kidding.
Which went nowhere, but we didn't know that was as good as it was.
Yeah, right.
That you had accomplished all you could.
Yeah, that was as good as it got.
Yeah.
And then I knew I really belong more behind the scenes than I do writing sitcoms.
Now, this is a serious question, sort of, because we run into this all the time with people who ask us about getting into showbiz. I mean, the answer for most people is don't, right, is choose something else. It is a very long climb if you plan to make it in the entertainment industry. It's not for most people, for reals, right?
I wouldn't say that, especially now, because, I mean, I understand the thought behind it, but now with entertainment so decentralized and with so many people sort of waking up in the morning and taking a photo and then being in show business,
right?
it's less formidable than it was. And of the 102 people I interviewed, 103 being me,
You interviewed yourself?
Well, I tend to do most days anyway. Ralph knows that.
Yes. His entire conversation's with himself.
All right.
And I live alone, and I'm never alone.
So the 103 tips are from 102 and you.
Correct.
Different people. Okay.
Correct. I think only three said don't come into the business.
Is that right?
One, pretty much one was kidding, flat out kidding. The other two said if it doesn't really move you and drive you and you're not passionate about it, those words, then consider something else. But nobody said don't do it.
How about that? Well, the truth of the matter is if somebody says don't do it and you still want to do it, I mean, that's kind of essential in order to make it, because you're going to be facing a lot of rejection anytime you start in a new career or
exactly.
something like that. And you have to just press on. You have to go past those people who tell you no in order to get anywhere.
Well, Ralph knows those stories, and I certainly took 4 years to get my job at CBS, and I don't know what I would have done had it not happened. And there are days when you're quite frustrated paying, you know, last month's bills with next month's check. And
sure.
and going into the couch for change for crackers for lunch.
What kind
well,
of people
I went
did
to the
you
couch
interview?
For crackers for lunch. I was just
you,
skipping.
You went in the couch for crack.
That's different. Yeah.
What kind of people did you interview in the book? What was the range of different types of
right,
people?
We need to take a break. We need to take a break.
You're a bad man.
So 103.
Ralph just stopped vomiting long enough to
exactly.
ask the question, and now you're going to cut him off?
I'm barely keeping down the Coke.
And I may start.
I'm going to give him a chance to go empty.
Thank
and then
you.
Come back, and we'll continue with Jim McCarron. 103 ways to get into TV when we get back on camera. Author Jim McCarron's in studio with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show. His book is available from Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. It's called 103 Ways to Get into TV. And basically, Jim, what you've done is you've kind of answered the basic questions like, once I get off the plane at LAX, which direction do I drive and who's my first phone call if I want to make it in showbiz, right?
Correct.
Ralph, you had a question just before we broke.
Yeah, I read the book, and for those people who are trying to literally to get into television, regardless of what aspects you're interested in, it is an invaluable resource. But I was curious, Jim, what's the gamut of people, what kinds of people did you interview for the book? From
I did a lot of assistants. I interviewed a lot of assistants because that's the power in L.A.
Is that right?
That's the true power. They're the gatekeepers, and they are the executives of tomorrow. Which sounds cliche, but it's true. And then I interviewed an Emmy-winning director. I interviewed the author of 500 Days of Summer, co-script writer.
Okay.
Because as explained in the book, what I didn't know after I saw that movie and I went onto Facebook talking about what a good movie it was, somebody messaged me back on Facebook and they said, well, do you know who wrote that? And I said, no. And the answer was, he sat outside your desk at CBS for 6 months. Outside your office at CBS.
He was your assistant?
He was not my assistant. He was the assistant to the president of CBS, whose That's office funny. Adjoined mine, but her desk was closer to
Wow.
Our
wow.
And that's where he wrote it.
At the desk.
On the
that's
job.
Great.
At the desk.
That's
well,
funny. Networking. And a lot of the kinds of advice that not only you give, Jim, but the people you interview in the book give, it is common sense, but I think it's worth people reading it before they try to get into a new career. I mean, about networking, for instance, about not burning bridges.
Correct.
And those types of things. I mean, are those the kinds of tragic mistakes that people make and then they sit around in their apartment all day wondering why they can't get work?
Well, I don't know what they do in their apartments the rest of the day. I don't think we want to know. But yes, and I don't think it just applies to show business, but it's absolutely the common sense things. And keep in mind, again, it's not as if the students I spoke to who showed a lot of interest in this material were in Chicago, and they don't really have a grasp, it seems, even in today's day and age, of life in Los Angeles or in Hollywood, however you want
right.
to clarify it. Because they would say, well, it's really backstabby there, isn't it? And should I go because it's really mean? And I'd like, I don't know what you're watching, but, you know. As Ralph pointed out, when I myself was trying to figure out, and I remember this clearly.
What was the date and time?
July of 89. It was a month before I left, and I was thinking about coming out to L.A. from my home in Knoxville, Tennessee, of all places, where I spent my 20s. And Ralph said, L.A. is what you make of it. Because I was intimidated by the thought of it.
Of course, yeah.
But it was framed in such a way that sort of made it easier that L.A. is what you make of it.
I totally agree with that. Absolutely agree with that.
L.A. is like a smorgasbord. You can just pick and choose from any number of things and like make your own city out of it. It doesn't really have
right.
a personality that's imposed upon you.
But I think the problem, what a lot of people run into, is that it's a small amount of jobs and it's a mountain of people that want it.
And there's no what would be considered standard way of breaking in.
Yeah.
There's
right.
There's no. I mean, if there's an application process, there's not. And if there is a portal where you can enter your resume, there's not. I mean, there are, but nobody really gets jobs that way. So yeah,
and you can't just show up with a script, for instance, and expect anybody to read it. I mean, even if you've got something, that's a tough way to go, right?
True, except for that one day that somebody shows up with a script and gets somebody to read it, and it sells. And
that's
I'm
the
not
being, for everywhere they say you can't get in, right. Someone has gotten in that way. That's the weird part.
It's just not you.
Yeah, right. It's always the next guy. It's the other story.
But I think, I'm sorry. Go ahead, John.
I think what I tried to do is just let them know that. You know, it's a town where on many different levels, as Ralph said, you can make it, and that even making it can have different definitions. And just showing up is making it to a degree, because a lot of people think about showing up and never get here.
Yeah, right.
But it's about where to live. It's about how much money to bring.
Which restaurants to wait at?
That does come up.
I know.
If only because some make the mistake of coming out here without a car, so they'll need to think about getting a job as a waiter or a bartender, and thus will have to think about doing it in Hollywood because they'll be living there and they'll need to walk to work.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's little things like where not to live, what time of year not to come out here, how much money to bring, and how to begin networking and making friends. And what many, many, many people say in the book, which is once you even get a job of any kind, make yourself interesting in another area so that the job is not your life.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I thought the other thing that a lot of people brought up, and I'm sure there's resistance from folks who decide, hey, I'm going to be an actor or I'm going to be a director or whatever, and they don't want to start at the bottom. You know, we have that. It seems like especially a lot of young people today have that, I want the rocket ride to success without putting in the hard work. Almost every person in your book that you interviewed, Jim, started out as an intern.
Exactly.
Or started out as a page or started out, I mean, literally getting coffee and sweeping and doing all the types of things that they probably thought they were too good at, but were smart enough to have the long view and realize, I just got to get my foot in the door somewhere.
And even those jobs were accidentally attained, which is, of course, the other thing about the book is you always get a job or a career through the most unexpected means. But the number one piece of advice, and there is a top 10 at the back of the book of the best pieces of advice from these 102 people.
Tell me so I don't have to read the whole first part of the book.
Number one is get an internship.
Really?
Without a doubt. Paid
That's
or unpaid.
One.
If you can afford it, get an unpaid one. But paid or unpaid, get an internship. I know somebody who graduated from college. She's in the book. She showed up here. She went to get an unpaid internship, and it was for students only. She had been out of school already.
Right.
So she went to the Valley and got a night course.
Enrolled
in one course for $20, came back and got the internship, and then went on to an executive career.
How about that?
How about that? A lot of great advice. I mean, it's a great primer if you're interested in this. Of course, you wrote the book for people all over the country, but there are a lot of people listening right now who are trying to figure out how to knock on the right door. It's called 103 Ways to Get into TV. The author's name is Jim McCarron. You can buy it through Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble. Hey, before
just
you go,
Amazon.com,
Jim,
I think.
Just Amazon.
No more Barnes & Noble. Sorry. Okay.
But it is on Kindle as well.
Great. Before you go, I want to throw a couple of dates at you because I'm really more fascinated in
this is Bean's category, right?
I'm more fascinated. And these are kind of easy, but I want to test you out before we have
Asperger
you back.
Twins
for the
now are going to talk to each
is
other.
Is it going to be September 15th, 1959?
No, what was September 15th, 1959?
Wasn't somebody here born on September 15th, 1959?
I don't think
no.
so.
No, but that's, okay.
You don't know everything, do you?
I picked some pretty big ones that I think you'll do, but we'll see. Okay, January 28, 1986.
Challenger.
Yeah, Challenger Blimp. Okay. August 31st, 1997.
Princess Diana.
All right, one more.
Wow.
May 14th, 1998.
1998. Was that the finale of Seinfeld?
Yes, it was.
Oh,
ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, my God.
That's for real, people. That's for real.
It's also when Sinatra died.
All right. Yes, take it easy. Now you're just showing up.
Great to meet you, Jim. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you all very much.